Friday. Welcome to the Farm Report, Heritage Radio Network, sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Today in studio, we have two special guests, Patrick Martins and Anastasia Cole.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Anastasia. They'll be chiming in towards the end of the episode with some final thoughts. Today we'll be talking about young farmers and about the somewhat disconcerting statistic that the average age of farmers is steadily increasing. And we'll also cover the stigmas associated with farming as a career. And we'll talk about how to reverse this trend and popularize farming among a younger demographic.
Yes, you're right, Lorenzo. Patrick, wanted to give you a chance to say hello. Happy to have you here with us on the Farm Report today.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
Awesome. The two young farmers we'll be speaking with today are both out of Missouri. We'll be first speaking with Eric Norden of Plattsburgh, Missouri, and then with Matt Kiefhofer of Edgerton, Missouri. We did a little bit of research beforehand just to give our listeners an idea about why we are talking to these young farmers today. And we want people to understand that what is going on in the trend of the age of young farmers is that it is increasingly decreasing. So, for example, the Economic Research Service branch of the United States Department of Agriculture tells us that the average age of farmers in 1997 was 54 years of age. The proportion of farmers aged 55 and over rose from 37% in 1954 to 61% in 1997. Farmers are older on average than others in the civilian labor force, and that's for several reasons. They're self-employed workers. Farmers can continue to farm, and they can often reduce the scale after reaching an age at which they want their wage or salary or earners to, you know, become less of a part of the production and therefore get closer to their retirement. The mechanism of agriculture also has helped older farmers continue farming by substituting machinery for some physical labor, and that can sometimes come in the hand of a younger farmer.
Yeah, I mean, the agricultural census is revealing that the average age of U.S. farmers has slowly risen, with fewer younger people than in the past. And the number of entrants into farming has fallen over time. This is attributable both to the decline in farm numbers and to the fact that farm families have fewer children than in the past. And the typical entry into farming, as you guys know, is through the family farm business. Less frequent is the agricultural ladder, in which a hired farm worker becomes a tenant and ultimately an owner-operator. Some of you listeners may be familiar with our HRN show Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, one of the country's foremost farmers and activists. Severin is making a film about farmers under 40, and she's canvassed the country spreading the word about farming and encouraging a younger generation to enter into the industry.
A reoccurring theme on Greenhorn Radio, Severin's show, has been the stigma of farming and how, for example, Severin's family, the host, wasn't ecstatic about her choice to become a career farmer. There's a stigma that farming is somewhat an anti-intellectual pursuit, somehow less than other careers. During the course of the interviews that Lorenzo and I have conducted for this Farm Report program, we've noticed that the farmers we've spoken to are truly some of the most eloquent, well-spoken, and kind-hearted people. These individuals are politically informed and socially and globally conscious. Aside from that, our farmers are in tune with natural processes that we, as myself, a city person, aren't as connected to. They have a different brand of intelligence, if you will. They have an intuitive intelligence, sort of an anti-anthropomorphism. They understand humanity as only a small part of a much grander natural scheme. I think we have our first farmer that we'll be speaking with today, Eric Norden of Plattsburgh, Missouri, on the line. Eric, are you here with us? Hello, Eric.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well today. We're very happy to have you here with us on the Farm Report. What's the weather like there in Plattsburgh, Missouri?
It's not too bad. We had some heavy storms early this morning.
Really?
It looks like it's building up again for another storm this afternoon.
You guys have been in need of some rain there or not so much?
No, not really so much, but like all the crops around are starting to pollinate, and the rain's good for them now, as long as we don't get any like hail or tornadoes or strong winds.
Yeah, that would throw you for a loop this time of year. Definitely. Well, did you have a chance to hear some of our introduction? And if so, do you have any comments on some of the points that we brought up that, you know, are most, connected to you and your position as a farmer? I know you're a second or third generation farmer. Is that right?
Yeah, it'd be a third generation farmer. It started, my grandpa started it back in like the 40s or even way before that, like the 30s. He started with like 100 acres, and then my dad and my uncle came around, and they've built the farm up to 4,000 acres of land and a couple thousand head of hogs.
A couple thousand head of hog.
Yeah.
How old are you, Eric?
30. Just turned 30 on the 4th. So.
Just
oh,
30.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Now, do you think that you would have entered into this industry had it not been a family practice?
Probably not. It's very hard for anybody to enter into like the farming industry because it costs so much money.
Right, and that actually brings me to one of my questions. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the recurring themes on Greenhorn Radio, I don't know if you've been a listener, but Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin Shiner Fleming, our show for young farmers by young farmers, has been about the difficulty young startup farmers experience trying to attain the capital necessary to secure some land for themselves to start off.
So do you think that, like, since as a 30-year-old, and you're probably still working a little bit with your father and uncle, is your youth an advantage as to what you're able to do as a farmer, and are there any disadvantages to your age?
My advantages of what?
Of your youth, of your young age of 30. I mean, you're definitely able to do more than, I would say, probably your uncle or father, just in terms of, you know, manual labor. Is that true? But
Yeah. It always helps to have a younger guy around on the farm because, like, they used to be, you know, they used to be 30 at one time, and they were really go-getters, so now they expect me to do the same as they did when they were 30. I mean, my uncle's 71 and my dad's 63, so they're no young bucks anymore. So,
does technology play a large role in your farm operation? And, I mean, how... How open are the elders to embracing technology on the farm, and does it help to have a younger person who might be a little more technologically savvy?
Oh yeah, they're open to it. They come from the age of where they know how to turn on a computer. So me being around, having some knowledge. I mean, I don't have all the knowledge in the world about computers, but I know quite a bit about them, and. They've adopted some of the like technology so far, anyway, and I'm sure that as time goes on, more and more of the agriculture, you know, they'll be using more and more computers as time goes on.
And one thing, when you said that they consider you the go-getter now, what does that mean? Like, what are you going out there to get? What are you doing that's pushing forward your farm and, you know, the legacy of your family out there in Plattsburgh?
Just like more energy and just able to work, you know, more hours and just
better,
you know,
production.
More production or whatever, just to push them to keep going. I mean, they were really, you know, prosperous farmers back when they were in their 30s. They really went hard. We went like small, like you know, started out with a 4-row corn planter, and now we have like 16-row corn planters. So,
wow. So what is going on your farm besides? I know you just said, you know, you have thousands of hogs right now and 4,000 acres. What else are you raising on your land?
We background cattle, and then we have like a small cow calf operation. And right now, this time of year, we're baling hay. But the weather hasn't been too cooperative because it rains every couple of days. But we did get quite a bit done last week.
And, like, with the baling of the hay, for example, like, I don't know. Where does hay go? What do you do with the hay? How does it help your farm? I'm sure many of our listeners don't know either, except for what these big, you know, bales look like from movies.
They go as feed for the cattle and then, like, bedding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of like your sheets. Or your covers on your pillow, you put them down for the animals, and then they lay on it, and you change it out every, like in the wintertime, especially because the weather gets pretty severe around here and normally rains once a week at least and snows some. And then you just put that on the ground so the animals can lay on it, and then they can be comfortable and don't have to sleep in the mud and the muck.
ahead.
Hey, can I ask you a question? This is Patrick.
Yeah.
Like, what are, like, two or three of, like, the worst jobs on the farm? Like, that historically, like, are given to the rookies or, you know, just, like, the most back-breaking or smelly or something type of, you know, farm work on your guys' farm?
Sometimes if you get, I don't know, I'm not really for sure really what the worst jobs are, but.
Well, what's your least favorite?
We have a mill, like a processing mill where it grinds up like the corn dust and stuff. And if it rains and someone doesn't clean it out at least once a week, it gets really nasty.
Caked and, up, I'm sure.
Yeah, stinky and not a fun job, but no. It has to be done weekly, so.
That doesn't sound like fun. Yeah, well, you know, we all got to keep working to, you know, continue on. One thing, just to get back to how we were wanting to talk about, you know, younger farmers and how we can reverse this trend of, you know, the average age of the farmer being, you know, 57 years old right now. You know, what do people that maybe graduated in your class with you, you know, of high school do? I mean, are there a lot of farmers in your area? Or are you solely a farmer, you know, because of your family's, you know, land and out of necessity to keep the family business alive? Or is it something that you think a lot of people do have an interest in an area like where you live?
Yeah, there's quite a few farmers in my area. And there's really not too many younger farmers, but there is quite a few.
Do you?
But, yeah, go ahead.
Well, do you have any ideas, like, as to how we can, you know, continue to keep younger people interested in the role of keeping farming and sustainable farming alive?
Or what livestock are the best livestock for, like, a young farmer? Like, what's a manageable, like, crop or, you know, livestock breed for a beginning farmer?
Like an easy?
Yes, an easy something that would encourage them to get started because they'd see a success.
Really any type of livestock. Like pigs, they're fairly easy. But if someone just wanted to, like, test the waters in farming, they might, like, get a cow and a calf or something. Just and then secondly, then go into pig farming. But it seems that it, like, the simplest way would be to have some cows or something.
That, to me, seems like it would be the hardest.
Why do you think it's important for this country to generate more young farmers?
Because we don't have, I mean, if there's no farmers, I mean, there's no food, really. You know, it's very important to, because, like, My idea is the United States is pretty much built off of agriculture. You know, if the United States didn't have agriculture, I mean, how would they make most of their, I mean, anything? What would they sell and what would they do, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So I would like to ask, do you have any, you know, do you have a 5 or 10 year plan or anything that you've brought to the table to your family to, you know, move some of the processes of your farm along?
Yeah, I have a few ideas, but,
would you be letting out any family secrets if you shared them with us?
Yeah, if he told you, he'd have to kill you.
yeah, I have to keep those secrets. If I told everybody, there might be somebody from out there come move into Plattsburgh and start their own farming, corporation.
No, dude, because you'd be registered on Heritage Radio Network of having said it first. We'd present that in a court of law.
Anastasia wants to chime in.
Yeah, Eric, I'm wondering, speaking of people coming out there from out here, would you ever take on an apprentice? Do you like the apprentice system? Do you think that's a good way to keep young people entering the, you know, sort of the agricultural ladder?
Yeah, I do. I think if an older farmer, like, doesn't have any kids or anyone to pass on the, you know, farming thing. I mean, it's been done in a few, I've read about it in a few magazines where, you know, you just take, like, a local kid and you just start working with him, and eventually he buys the farmland from you when you're ready to retire, or he slowly gets into it. But yeah, the apprenticeship, that's a good way to get people to start farming.
And I wanted to ask a question. What's it like living and working together with your family? I mean, that most people live with one family and work with a group of strangers. You live and work with your family. Is that hard sometimes?
Yeah, it makes it kind of difficult. I mean, you still, it's lots of drama sometimes, but I mean, it's really not too bad.
Well, it's not like there's no work families that don't have drama either, so.
Have you ever considered?
It's not really as bad as I make it sound. It works out pretty good. I mean, if I had a bunch of cousins and all that stuff that were interested in farming, it might be a little different, but they're not really interested in it, so.
Well, why? Do we know? I mean, what turned them off from having an opportunity to come to the farm? I mean, is it a money issue? Is it just a pure, you know, hands-on issue? Well, why aren't they interested? What are they doing? I mean, doctors, teachers, lawyers. I mean, what are they up to?
They're older than I am. They're like in their 40s now, 40, 50.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like my uncle's kids. But they're like successful in their own business. Like one's like the insurance. American Family Insurance, like number three guy, and
wow.
My cousin works for Johnson & Johnson. So
very good company.
Yeah,
very good company, Johnson & Johnson. And one thing we've discovered by interviewing a bunch of young farmers is that they're really multi-talented. I mean, their skills are not limited to what they can use on the farm. So, had you not chosen to be a farmer, what are some of the other career paths you might have taken into consideration?
I really enjoy the outdoors. I'd probably like be a park ranger or a conservation agent. I probably would have chose that path.
Cool.
That's cool.
Or like a hunting guide or
hunting guide.
Yeah.
I'm down with that one.
Sounds kind of dangerous.
Maybe be on the Deadliest Catch.
Deadliest Catch. We may be able to hook you up with one of those producers.
I think, didn't we have the director of Deadliest Catch?
Amazing Race.
Of Amazing Race.
Yeah. Yeah, we had, Eric, we had the head of production for Amazing Race on our show a couple weeks back.
Director of photography, Peter Sickhart. Yep, on the Q Report. But I'm pretty sure he's done some work for the Deadliest Catch, or maybe he's coming up with some work. So maybe we can get you guys in contact.
How are the pigs looking this year? I mean, there's been a lot of rain, you were saying. I mean, how does that affect the size of the pigs that you bring in?
It makes it kind of difficult on them. Actually, we've had, about 30 litters in the last 5 days. So they're doing fairly well. You just have to make sure they're covered and make sure they have plenty of bedding. But when it gets too hot, then you don't want them to have too much bedding. Just like when the rain comes, you want them to be covered. But when the rain's over, you just want them to have some shade so they can relax.
Is there ever one that you never send to paradise? You're just like, I like you, little guy. You're staying here. You're going to die of old age. Does that ever... Is there any ever connection between you and the animals like that on a personal level?
Yeah, sometimes. But there's, I have connection with them on a personal level. Not everybody can,
Not all of them make their way into your heart.
No, not all of them. I mean, there's a lot of them. I mean, they pretty much all make, I come in contact with pretty much all the hogs and all the cattle that come through the farm.
And actually, this sort of experience is not altogether uncommon amongst farmers. We had a farmer on the farm report who said that she basically fell in love with one of her pigs, brought it into the house, and kept it as like a domesticated house animal.
Who was that again? I wish I could remember. That was great.
I'm kind of happy you don't remember, actually.
Yeah. Patrick wants a goat, though, so.
I would like a goat. Do you have any goats on your farm, Eric?
No. But I know a couple guys that have them.
They're cool, right?
Please don't have them send one to the Heritage Foods USA national headquarters.
Yeah, you'd just be the pet.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the most humane place for them here in New York City.
He'd be the pet until we ate him.
All right, Eric. Well, listen, this is really a fun and illuminating interview. We want to thank you for joining us here on HRN, and I'm sure we can have you on our other program, Greenhorn Radio, with Severin.
Yeah, we should get her to come by your farm and check it out for her for documentary. That could be fun.
All right, yeah. Come on by. Come on down or over or whatever.
Whichever direction we're coming from.
We're coming up.
No, dude.
We're coming west, actually, yeah. Directly. But Eric, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being a part of today's show on the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report, sponsored by Hearst Ranch. We'll be back in just a bit.
Ti ricordi la ricotta a colazione? E che baci, che tramonto dal balcone. Così buona io non l'ho mangiata più. Era buona forse perché c'eri tu. Di formaggi ce ne sono a mille gusti, ma son pochi quelli buoni, quelli giusti. A me è piaciuta tanto quella lì. Non la voglio più se non è così. La ricotta de Vessere bianca, bella magra. Tu ta morbida e ti si scioglie nella bocca. Ti ricordi quella gita la mattina? Ci siamo fermati, era finita la benzina. E quei due ci han detto di restare lì. Ci siamo guardati e gli abbiamo detto di sì. Che profumo, era tenera, grandiosa. Non del negozio, era tutta un'altra cosa. Con lo zucchero, il cacao ed il caffè. Non la voglio più se non è con te. Sono a mille gusti, ma son pochi quelli buoni, quelli giusti. A me è piaciuta tanto quella lì. Non la voglio più se non è così. Non la voglio più se non è così. Non la voglio più se non è.
Hey Matt, you with us?
Yeah.
Hey, we have Matt Kefaver from Edgerton, Missouri. So just to catch you up a little bit, Matt, on what we've been discussing.
Before, I want to interrupt you, Lorenzo. Hi, Matt. Heather here, co-host of the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. How's it going?
All right. How you doing?
Doing really well, thank you. And guess what? We've got Patrick Martins in the house of Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
And say hello to Matt.
Hey, Matt. What's up, dude?
All right, how you doing, Patrick?
Good, good. Good to hear your voice.
And we also have our good friend in the studio, Anastasia Cole.
Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Yep, so we're just going to catch you up briefly. Lorenzo's going to talk to you about the main focus of today's episode, which is young farmers, and that is what you are.
So, Matt, we've been talking about the somewhat disconcerting statistic that the average age of farmers is steadily increasing. And about the stigmas associated with farming as a career, that it's thought of in some circles as somehow an anti-intellectual pursuit. And we want to talk about your ideas about how we might reverse this trend and popularize farming among a younger demographic. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of your land and how you became attached to it?
And most importantly, how old are you anyway?
I'm 20 years old right now.
Yeah, you are.
Our youngest farmer yet, by far.
Wow.
20 years old.
You sound like you're like 23 or 24, Matt.
Yeah.
Maybe 24 and a half.
It's okay. I'm right there with you. We only have a few years on you. We're a young group ourselves.
So what kind of farming do you do?
What kind of farming? Well, we raise corn and soybeans, and we have quite a few cows that we raise. And then we have about 80 sows that we farrow to finish every year.
Well, so that's pretty amazing. I mean, 20 years old. I mean, I'll say the cycles of farming are so hard. And I remember once Doug Metzger was this farmer, and he said that all he learns to do is to predict why something is happening. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he might have to go as far back as 30, 40 years to remember a story that his grandfather told him about this certain type of infection.
Hence the farmer's almanac.
Well, and additionally, do you think he keeps his own records of like on his own farm? I mean, I know Anastasia, you're here at Roberta's. You're helping them with this rooftop garden that's above the shipping containers that we're broadcasting out of. I know you guys keep your logbooks. Is this like the same kind of records that Doug would be keeping on his farm?
Do you keep detailed records?
We do. We weigh in everything that we harvest, and we write it all down so that we know exactly how much we're getting out of the land this season. And mm-hmm. the idea is you look at those logs and then you say, how can we double this? How can we triple this?
And you guys season? Are going to have you started one of the toughest seasons in memory, right?
Oh, it's been rough. If those tomatoes aren't super watery, I will be a very, very happy lawyer.
Well, the basil and all the herbs are starting to come up right now beautifully.
Yeah, yeah, and the arugula and the mesclun exploded, so that was great.
It did explode, yeah. Literally. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I mean, Anastasia is one of our young farmers here in New York, one of our young urban farmers, if you will. You can, you want to tell us a little bit about the project that we have up on the roof and in the other location right down the road from here?
Yeah, I mean, when I was last on, we were mostly talking about building the spaces up, and now we've actually got, you know, plants coming out of the ground. I mean, we're eating stuff.
They're like 2-3
harvest.
Feet tall, some of those plants.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And now we're getting into the tricky areas of, pest control, and the birds are nibbling.
Is that where you have the cat?
Well, the cat actually came along and decided to park here because, you know, there's food.
He was my co-host yesterday.
The cat.
On one of the shows, yeah. Nice. So actually, guys, I think we have Matt back on the line. Matt, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So we were asking you about the history of your land and how you became attached to it.
Well, my grandpa, which he was born in 1918, he farmed mostly all his life. Kind of, he did work as a postman part of his life, but primarily he farmed. And we still have his farm that he's owned since about 1930s, and my dad really started farming in high school and has done that his whole life and has purchased several farms since then, and we continue to grow today. And I have two brothers with me that we all farm together.
I gotcha. And in what ways is being a young, strapping lad such as yourself an advantage on the farm? And in what ways does it hold you back?
Well, in today's world, there's a lot of stuff, especially in high school, for a kid, you know, that if you live on a farm and you actually farm, it keeps you pretty busy and does kind of withhold you from, I guess, the social life a little bit, but...
Yeah, I guess that could be with anything, though, but more so, I guess, is it because you have longer hours, you're waking up earlier, you're maybe a little tired after class?
Yeah, and you know, it's just not a 9-to-5 job, you know, it's kind of...
It's a life.
It's kind of a 24-7.
When you need to do something, you have to do it.
Definitely, much agreed. I mean, there must be things that keep you up at night about what's going on your land. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of times, you know, you have to stay out all night, whether we're... putting in crops or working, trying to pull a calf out of a cow or something. Oof.
How do you light the farmland if you're working through the night?
Well, it's...
I mean, it, talking about lanterns and flashlights, or do you have big floodlights? I'm not visualizing the farm, so I don't know how you would be working like at 3 a.m. out there.
Well, all the tractors and equipment we have pretty good lights on them anymore. They make them tell what you're doing, because a lot of people do it these days.
Right.
So in the graduating class from your high school, I mean, what was the percentage of kids who went into farming?
Well, I think I was pretty much the only kid that my dad actually farms for a living.
Mm-hmm.
There was one or two other kids that they have a few cows and stuff, but nobody that I know of that actually farmed for a living.
Do you ever offer up some of the food that you prepare for your farm to your friends out there? That you prepare on your farm to your friends out there?
Not on a regular basis, but in high school, in our FFA that we have, we always had every year we had a hog roast at the school.
Wait, did you say SSA or CSA?
FFA.
What is it?
Future Farmers of America.
Oh.
And we always hosted we had a hog roast that usually homecoming football game, and everybody always knew our pork that we raised, and we still continue to do that.
Cool. So do you ever have any of your neighbors come by the farm, or do you have like a little market at the farm where they can purchase your pork or anything like that?
Doesn't Paradise sell your stuff?
Paradise does sell our stuff, and I do. I have had several friends of mine that have bought stuff from Paradise and said they like it, and I tell people about it. You know, anytime it comes up, I tell them that we do sell stuff out there.
I just wanted to ask one question. What makes a good pork product, and what makes a bad pork product? Like, there's so much talk of the loss of taste in pork. What about, you know, what's wrong with the bad, and what's right with the right?
Well, I think what makes a good pork product is you got to take care of them, and you got to know what you feed them. You can't feed them poor quality grain and poor feed and expect to have a good product come out of them, just anything.
Who deals with the feed? Who places the orders for your grain and your corn and things of that nature?
Well, I usually take care of most of the feed. Just because it's easier, you know, if one person does it, you don't have much confusion on whether somebody ordered something or not.
Mm-hmm.
But we raise all of our own corn, and we just store it in a bin. So, I mean, we always have that, and then just our additives that we put in with it, we order and always have it on hand.
Do you feel like working on a farm has given you a kind of education that you could have never gotten in the classroom?
I think working on a farm really does give you an advantage over a lot of things. You really learn how to work with your hands and a lot of problem-solving skills, too, I think.
Yeah, and you become aware of some natural processes. I mean, you get an intuitive intelligence that sometimes you just can't get from books.
That's right. There's a lot of stuff that you can't learn from a book that you can learn from on hand.
That you can learn from a pig.
Experience.
Matt, what's the 5 and 10 year plan for your farm and for yourself as a farmer?
Well, we're trying to farm. I hope to farm my whole life if I can and continue to grow throughout our life.
Got an early start.
Anyway. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier when your dad farms, and then you can kind of come into it. You can kind of grow with each other. It makes it a lot easier versus trying to start on your own. It's really hard to get started these days with equipment cost and stuff like that. It's just hard to start out from nothing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we were talking about that a little earlier about how, you know, young farmers could even possibly gain the capital to buy or purchase or even rent land to do a startup operation. But one thing I'd like to ask is, you know, with your young age, if you are using new technologies that, you know, have helped move things along for your farm and for your family, for that matter.
Yeah, it's just really, it's really awfully competitive. From in my area anyway, there's not really many young farmers, but it is, everybody wants to get big, and they want to get big fast anymore, just because it's hard to make a living farming if you don't have a lot. The profit margin's so small on everything anymore.
So can I ask a question? Like, if someone, Matt, was going to get into farming, like in upstate New York or Northern California or, you know, north of Chicago, what advice would you give them? Like, what's an inspirational, you know, bit of advice, but also like a warning bit of advice, you know, for people that are about to quit their jobs and start a livestock farm?
Well, my advice would be to go work for somebody that does what you want to do. That way you can get as much firsthand knowledge as you can and get all, just make sure you know how to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then maybe while you're working for them, try to get maybe a little ground rented if that's what you're looking to do, and just kind of start out small. And just kind of work your way up. It's about the only way you can.
And what would you warn them about?
Well, if it's anything like it is here, you just really got to watch people, because everybody, they might seem like your friend, and then they want the ground that you have, seems like.
I think that could be true to most things in life. Well.
Hey, Matt, I got one last question. How do you feel about the rising age of farmers in America? And how do you think we can reverse this trend and popularize farming amongst the younger generation?
Well, I'm really not surprised about the rising age of farmers, just because there's not, like I said, and when I was in high school and stuff, there's just really not many young kids that want to do it. Everybody wants to... You know, it's really hard to get started.
So maybe we need to come up with some kind of plan, you know, like how we can maybe teach farming more, you know, in schools. This is always spoken about, and so why it's important, and how you can become profitable about it, you know, selling to people locally or teaming up with groups that want to support the kinds of, you know, farming practices that you'd be able to produce on your farm. I mean, maybe it is the continuing of the education of this, you know, important movement towards that, like, sustainable biodiversity and heritage that, you know, we're all working toward. We are going to wrap up the show for today. It was a pleasure.
Great job, guys.
Speaking with both Eric and Matt, and we'll be back next Friday with the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report.
And if there are any young farmers out there, check out our other show about young farmers, Greenhorn Radio. It's on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
Take care. Bye.